You know it's great. We're coming at you. It's not too late to donate. Please give to 106.5 FM WFMP LP Louisville, Kentucky. It's for everyone!
Hello. Welcome to this week's episode of Critical Thinking for Everyone. I am Patty Payette, the co-host of Critical Thinking for Everyone, and I am in the booth today with a special guest, Dr. Gay Boffman. Welcome, Gay.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Gay is a colleague here at U of L, and she's a professor in the School of Dentistry. And Gay, I would love to have you start by telling people what's your life like? What's your day-to-day like as a professor teaching dentistry?
Well, first of all, I think it's awesome. And every morning when I get up, I say, I'm going to school. I cannot wait to get to school. I practiced dentistry about 30 years, private practice. Came into the dental school, which is a whole other story, as kind of a fluke. I'm retired technically, but have found a passion for teaching. My daily life at the dental school, my primary assignment is clinical. And I have a clinic, Clinic Delta. I say we are divas, and I am responsible for these third and fourth year students on a daily basis and work very closely. For several years, I taught an Introduction to Clinical Dentistry 1, which was our first year students.
Right.
And now due to some other changes, I was asked to create two classes. So I now primarily in clinic, but I teach Integrated Clinical Sciences 1 and 2.
Okay, so teaching in a clinic, when most people think about college professors, they think mm-hmm. of a classroom. So you teach in a clinic, you said third and fourth year. So these
right.
are students at the end of their dental.
Correct.
So they're taking these classes before they go out and actually start being a professional dentist?
Correct. They have their own patients, their own patient families. So they actually treat patients. I am with them side by side as they treat patients, meet new patients, and move through. So I'm with them every step of the way.
So it's like you're supervising them while they're practicing as a dental student on actual patients.
Real patients.
Before they are flying solo.
Correct. They are technically working on my license. So that's why I supervise each step by step.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but it is. My students, I am biased, are amazing. Over 3,000 students compete for those 120 slots in each class. And I have students who are very bright, want to be there,
awesome.
Cannot wait to learn. And again, that's where my 30 years of experience come in handy, because I can share with them tips and all the mistakes that I made, and hopefully they won't make those same mistakes. They can make their own mistakes.
Oh, okay. So this is giving me a better picture of what you do day to day. So you do, sounds like, a lot of teaching side by side as students are learning in the clinic on actual patients.
Yes.
But you said you also do some classroom teaching,
yes,
too?
I do. Yes.
And what is the classroom teaching?
Well,
that you do?
Again, previously, and I was the freshman, that we call them D1s, was Introduction to Clinical Dentistry 1. It's a two-semester. It was met once a week for three to four hours each week. So it was it had just pretty much a little bit of everything. We did a lot of the teaching, the basics, even things like drug addiction, motivational interviewing, worked with standardized patients, tobacco cessation, oral hygiene instructions, making impressions. It was a hodgepodge.
Interesting.
And the two new classes really are sort of like the bigger sisters, I guess you would say. They're third and fourth years, and it is somewhat the same. A lot of things fall into these classes, and it's connected to the clinical part. But I am course director with a Dr. Yayovich. She and I are course directors for this class, and again, it meets once a week, 2 to 5.
Sounds like every day is different for you.
Absolutely. That's what makes dentistry and teaching in the clinic so much fun.
Oh, I bet. Well, the reason that I've asked you to be here today is, of course, the show is on critical thinking, and you are quite a critical mm-hmm. thinker, and you're teaching your students how to be a critical thinker.
Yes.
And the reason I know this is because when I started leading this initiative at U of L on mm-hmm. critical thinking and putting critical thinking more explicitly into teaching, so that's been over 10 years now, you were one of the first faculty who embraced this so enthusiastically,
absolutely.
I think is the fair way to say that.
Very
is that fair.
Fair. Absolutely.
And so can you remember, how did you find out about this project of teaching with critical thinking? Like what, if you think back, why and how did you decide to get involved?
Oh, I know exactly how I got
you
involved.
You do?
But,
okay.
But the start of the story
yes.
is when I was very busy private practitioner, very busy,
yeah.
retired, came to the school, and quite frankly, I was bored.
Really?
Yes,
you were bored?
I was bored. So I would watch U of L Today, and I would sign up for any and everything because I was in totally a different area. So not the best start to the story, but I was bored. So I went to the first I2A, the critical
thing. Oh, our institute.
I was
yeah.
at the first one. And I,
gosh, that was 2009, yeah.
And that first year, I thought, this is kind of, I don't know, this is kind of different, kind of even made my head hurt a little bit. So anyway, that was the start. And then I came back the next year. So I guess I'm back. And for whatever reason, there was only one person I knew from the dental school day one, and that person left. And I had been watching this table. And they seemed like they really had it. They had it. They were just doing all this stuff. So the next day when I came back, I was alone. And I'm really not sure what possessed me, but I walked over to this table. It was all men. And I said, may I join your table? Because I had nobody, and they
right.
had a seat.
Right.
And they said, sure, yes. And I discovered they were philosophers. Honestly, if I'd known that, I would have been running out the
really?
Other.
Really? Why?
Oh, at philosophers. I'm a dentist. I'm not a philosopher. Who are these people? What the Sam Hill
sort
is that?
Sort of like an alien life form?
Absolutely. But that was actually a huge turning point for me.
Really?
Because, I don't know why, and I think Brian was there.
I think he was, too. Wasn't it that front table?
Yes.
Yes, I remember that.
But they took me under their wing, and at that time I'd already been given this course, the Freshman Introduction to Clinical Dentistry 1, and they took me under their wing, and something happened. And I'm like, this is the best stuff. This is so cool. I tend to run on my heart, which is good for a clinician, but this was a whole different. So I started to see it, and I thought, this is really good stuff. This is so good. This needs to be in my class. So I started to grasp and put in as much as I can. And again, I went back the next year. I'm going deeper. In fact, it always felt to me like I've got this stuff, and then I would go through another door. It's like, oh, there's more.
But like peeling an onion, as like, Linda Elder likes
yes,
to say, right?
Exactly.
There's always another layer
there's
there.
There's always another layer. So I think, too, though, then what happened was as I peeled back the onion, what happened to me is I thought, yeah, that's really cool for school. That's really good. But you know what? I can use this in my personal life, which is, it became something so important to me. It changed me. This critical thinking changed me.
Wow.
It was quite a evolution for me in many ways. Again, I explicitly incorporated into my teaching, but then I took it into my personal life, and it has had some moments, which if you ever want, I can share with you
yeah.
some very serious moments in my life where I used critical thinking.
Ah, yes. Wow. Absolutely. I want to hear you share, if you're willing to, a couple
absolutely.
Examples. Before we go there, though, mm-hmm. I think, so you started using this, you started to see how it could be used in
yes.
teaching, and in Brian Barnes, Go Brian,
yeah.
was one of the
yes.
the colleagues there who really helped you,
mm-hmm.
sounds like. Okay,
yes.
good. And could you give an example of how this critical thinking that you got so excited about at this institute here at U of L, and you went back to the health sciences campus, give an example of how it showed up in your teaching. How is your teaching different as a result of using this?
There's lots of pieces. I'll start with the clinical piece, which for me is with students. Sometimes students, we have different kinds of teeth, and students just want to know, well, what do I do? What do I need? how do I get an A? And they're very, very competitive.
Get an A.
How do I get an A? How do I?
And, hey, they worked really hard to get into dental school. They're used to results driven, right?
And being in the clinic, one of the things that I use on a daily, and I still use it, and the students are, I'm helping them to develop this skill because they'll come in, they'll say, Patty Payette's here, so what do I do? I'm like, well. And it's asking questions, gathering information.
Right.
And that's one of the, are you clear on what information's, what assumptions are you making? Patty Payette, not that you do not have a dark black tooth in the front. You do not, by the way, radio people.
She does not.
Yeah. Beautiful teeth. But but the students sometimes would say, well, that tooth's just so ugly. That must be why they're here. It's like, no, you have to ask questions.
Wow.
You have to make assumptions. And then also, too, as you ask the questions, as you figure out these things, again, I'm very biased with teeth, but teeth change lives. Don't make assumptions. So there were so many things. Those were some of the things clinically. And it's actually helped me because sometimes, again, I, too, want to make somebody.
You want to just jump right.
Boom. Yeah. Give an answer. And then when you slow down your thinking, and you do, you look at the wheel and you know, the elements, the standards, and you're a better dentist. You're a better dental student, but most importantly is you are a better dentist, and they will be better dentists because they are taking time to figure things out.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So what I'm hearing you say is I am a dental student, and I'm learning how to be a dentist, mm-hmm. and somebody walks in and is sitting in the chair. And so the first move I make as a critical thinker and as a dentist, but also as a practicing dentist, mm-hmm. right? But something that you want them to do throughout their career as a dentist is to start by asking questions.
Correct.
Both of, like, asking questions of the patient or of the internally of the situation, like, what do I know, what do I need to know, or both?
It's both. It's what do I need to know, but you, again, this is from my point of view, as a dentist, you really have to be curious. I want to know about you. And again, these dental students are very bright. They're very, very bright. They've been math science people. So sometimes the communication is something that's it's a little bit lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think with critical thinking, it sparks curiosity. And to better treat a patient, you need to be curious about that patient. You need to ask. And sometimes it's the last thing the patient will say, but you have to take time and to ask the good question and to find out why they're here. What is their purpose? I mean, you know your purpose, but what is their purpose? What are they here? What are their expectations? What assumptions are you making? And again, we go back to consequences. What we do, it has huge consequences. If people can't smile, their lives are very different.
Mm. Interesting. So that's an example of where you made a shift into both modeling and teaching.
Yes, because when I first started, a student would ask me a question or say something, and I would just sit and just do it. I would just do something real fast because I was pretty fast, but I didn't teach. I didn't slow down. Mm-hmm. I didn't break apart the thinking, the teaching, which was critical thinking. Clinically, it helped me. It helped me to teach, and they were able to learn because they could break it apart. For someone like me who's, you know, had a handpiece in their hand for so many years, I can go from A to Z, boom.
Right, you're an expert.
I am an expert. So from my side, it helped me to slow down, and it helped us to communicate and to bring the pieces together. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, you are. You're helping.
And that's clinically. Yeah. And again, of course, classroom
okay.
too.
All right. So that's a really good example of ask. Brian and I have talked over the months about the importance of asking questions.
Well, and again, I'm still going to stick with the clinical part.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm excited. There's a lot I want to
share. No, yeah. Go for it.
With dentistry, one of the most important things and something that I believe is very important is self-assessment. Which self-assessment and critical thinking go, from my opinion, hand in hand. As dentists, we must self-assess. You are constantly self-assessing. If I work on your tooth, I'm looking. And that's one of the things, too, incorporating with the critical thinking, with the teaching, that when I come and they show me a tooth or whatever is again, not just giving them the answer, but trying to draw out. Because if they are unable to successfully to self-assess well, they will not be a good dentist. They have to know what's good and what's bad.
Right, and like what a good filling looks like?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
A good example. Okay. Wow, this sounds like it's really powerful stuff.
It's
for
very.
You.
It's to me. This has been very powerful. And again, it's because my goal, my ultimate goal at this point in my life is to make the best dentist in the world, and to make those young people way surpass me. And again, just handing them an answer, just saying yes, do this. With dentistry, it's like the critical thinking. It is the critical thinking. You have tools. I don't care how much experience they have in dental school, they will never see everything. They have to be able to think. You have to use the tools that you're given. Oh, it's not all, which makes it exciting, makes it not boring.
Right. They're not going to see every example.
No.
They're going to have years ahead of them where there are going to be things that they didn't, that you never talked to them about.
Absolutely.
So you want them to be able to think their way through it.
Correct.
Fair?
Exactly.
All right. What else do you want us to, what else?
Well, different things. I was thinking about things, again, I guess I'll still say clinical for just a minute, is in my day when I was in my practice, I would buy products. We'd buy products. And the way I bought the products was Patty would come in from a certain dental supplier and she would say, oh, this is really great. So-and-so uses it right down the street, this great doctor.
Right.
Okay, so I'll buy one because Dr. Patty uses it, so
right.
It must be good. So one of the things that I believe that our evidence-based dentistry and critical thinking go hand in hand. So that's also been something that we've combined and have incorporated the classroom is critical thinking and actually bringing in real-life sales representatives, working with the librarians, and incorporating the critical thinking for making good decisions on buying products.
Wow. So you mean you actually use a salesperson who's
yes.
trying to sell a product and you work with the students to try to think that through?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Because, again, I made some mistakes. Again, I want my students to do better than me. Because I didn't look at evidence. I didn't collect information. I just, well, it's Patty uses it, so I guess I'll try. I'll try that, too.
Right.
So that's been one of the things. Some of the different things is the book in common, which you were with me some.
Yeah. So why don't we, start by saying that the university had a program. It doesn't, mm-hmm. not currently running this program, but
yeah.
it had for several years a book in common where there'd be one book
yeah.
that would be chosen by a committee, and this would be a book that was mm-hmm. recommended for students, especially first and second year students, well, mostly first year students, to read, and there would be a common campus conversation
correct.
Around that text
correct.
That was chosen.
Yes.
And so how did you, I remember you did, but could you talk a little bit about how you blended that into your, why that mattered to you?
Why it mattered to me, again, is shaping the students, and I go to the intellectual empathy, is walking in others' shoes. And we had different books. The book in common had never happened on health sciences, so I partnered with dental hygiene, wonderful partners.
Awesome.
But one of the biggest things, again, is going to treat the patient. I don't want my students to treat a patient as the 1 o'clock, as the 2 o'clock, as the crown. I want them to look at the whole person.
Wow. And that's pretty cool, Gay.
Well, I'm very serious and very passionate about this. So one of the things that happened was I met a person named Wes Moore at our American Dental Educations, and he spoke. And I was hearing all these wonderful things, and I thought, how can I incorporate how he's talking about looking, you're looking at different, but walking in others' shoes. And then I returned from that trip. That was the book in common.
Was his book called The Other Wes Moore?
The Other Wes Moore. So again, it talked about, that book talked about different ways of walking in others' shoes. We've also used The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, which is not a book that was on this campus, but was important to us.
Yes, and I've read that book. That would be a wonderful book.
It's a wonderful book.
To use, yeah.
But we would always try to push, or to not push, to draw out people and they would talk in their groups and reflective papers. I love reflections about walking. Don't just look into the person, but start to walk in their shoes. We did the last book I think I did was Hidden America.
Oh, right, the one about the essays, collection of essays around people. I read that. That was a couple years ago, was the book in common.
Correct.
About these are people who are often sort of could be someone who picks grapes seasonally, a migrant, right? These are like
Cincinnati Bengals cheerleaders.
Yeah.
I had a lot of bias there. I thought
that was a great chapter. Yeah. Truck drivers, you know, people who often have those hidden stories behind our culture.
Correct.
And our social structures.
And so one of the steps that we took from that book is we did Hidden ULSD, University of Louisville School of Dentistry.
Wow.
So again, trying to walk in others' shoes. And one of the pieces that turned out actually eye-opening to me, and not just to me but to the students, was our central sterilization. In fact, when someone said about, well, that's what, something about central sterilization, the first thing I said is, I don't even know where it is. So I had to find out where it was. And again, walking in their shoes, this is not exactly the patient, but still walking in their shoes, how much what they do, it affects everything that we do. They can literally shut down our school.
No, they talk about what that team does at the School of Dentistry, the central sterilization. What do they do?
They sterilize every instrument that goes in every patient's mouth, and they live in the basement. We rarely see them.
Wow.
When they have boards, they have to work hard. It's sometimes, I think, too, again, with that was that we just kind of assumed they just did their, it just, there they were. It just happened. It's
so
just
like,
magic.
Like there were like sort of elves at night that
yes.
like sterilized all these instruments and made our work possible.
Yes.
And safe.
And it was very interesting when we got to know about them. But again, it's kind of going back, is always trying to look, is walking in others.
That's pretty powerful.
Shoes. It's, I believe, very powerful. And again, I want students to be those dentists that take time to reach a little bit deeper. Not just, again, you're the 1 o'clock, you've got to, you need a, it's just to get to know. When you take time to get to know your patient, you are able to better treat your patient. You're not just assuming that they want that dark tooth. People have a lot of expectations. It's important to know what your patient needs, what they want, how you can help change their lives. And we do, as dentists, we do change lives.
So, wow. So I hear the importance of intellectual humility.
Absolutely.
So these are star students. These are students who are used to being great at everything.
Mm-hmm.
So part of intellectual integrity, which is taking the time, or empathy, right, taking the time to really hear other points of view, not make assumptions. How do you instill intellectual humility, the ability for the students to even see, oh, I don't know everything about this situation or this person, so I have to ask? That starts with intellectual humility. How do you cultivate that?
Well, again, going back to the book in common, and we do also some projects. Again, Brian, you're not here, but going back to the freshman year, we did I created kind of an exercise, I think you would say.
Yeah.
And again, these are students who are not in clinic yet. And I was told this will never happen. Brian was there. I believe it did, using Socratic questioning. And we had different situations. And again, bias. One of the situations that we, or things that we started,
right,
was I worked closely with our health sciences she's the diversity and inclusion, and we had a transgender patient come in, and the way they were treated and how the bias, and we discussed that in depth. Again, taking time to understand what's going on with this patient. It was a very powerful episode. It was the person who was Let me kind of back up a little bit here. We had the transgender patient,
yes,
who was a member of our transgender community, was there coming in, and a person, again, this is play acting, the one person was the dentist and the other was the dental hygienist.
Right.
And the way this started out was the dental hygienist is a little bit late that day, so the dentist is speaking, and this patient obviously is going through transitioning. And so the hygienist comes in and is starting to say, hello, how are you, and blah, 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 and then realizes she looks at the patient and then just kind of stops, walks out within earshot of the patient, and says, I am not treating it.
Wow.
Oh, it's very powerful. And then we stop, and then so we discuss the bias and how are we treating people. And again, we did use Socratic questioning in that day. It was there were some other scenarios.
And what was the result? How did the students, what was the result of that conversation? What did you notice?
I noticed the conversation continued after class. And again, there were two other pieces to that also, too, one with insurance and then one with public health. But words are powerful. You need to think through what you say. And I have, again, now this is anecdotal, but I believe my students are much more empathetic and take time to ask things like, what pronouns do you want to use? And I have seen a change, and I believe we are more welcoming to all.
You mean you've noticed that in the clinic?
Yes, I have.
Interesting. So the students who get this training in Socratic questioning and in seeing these scenarios and thinking very carefully and thoughtfully about how they're going to respond, that's in the first year?
Yes. And so I put that in the first
year.
In the first year, trying to prepare them. The Book in Common is in the first year. So it was, again, I would do things, bias. We had, we talked about bias, and I'm sorry, unconscious bias.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had lots of discussions, and I believe it made a change. It's kind of, I'm always getting mm-hmm. teased. I love reflections and some of the things. I do believe, and I can't recall the speaker's name that came here, but when you take time to write and to reflect, it does deepen and document your thinking. Again, there's papers, if I could think
yes.
of the lady's name, I can blank.
Yes.
But is writing.
Thinking of Patty Clayton?
Yes,
that's
who,
critical
yes,
reflection.
Yes, that's who. I was trying to think, oh,
yeah,
name.
Patty Clayton. Yeah.
But I took a lot of that with me. Also, one of the things is we would use discussion board, and they would use discussion board to reflect, and they did. And they would write reflections, and they did. And I became how important it is to explicitly place critical thinking explicitly. And I changed their reflections and asked them to use the elements and standards. It's the only change I made in the assignment.
Interesting.
The writing.
Wow.
Again, they paused and they thought, and the writing took on a totally different level. It was, and that was the only change.
That's interesting. So you're referring, for our listeners, you're referring to the elements of thought, which is part of the Pulitzer framework that Brian and I have talked about for many months.
Mm-hmm.
But it refers to the elemental foundational pieces of critical thinking, the information, concepts, mm-hmm. questions, and then you use the standards, mm-hmm. which of course are the standards, the guides that help us ensure that our thinking is quality, you know, logic, precision,
correct.
Clarity. So these are such great examples of how you've taken these concepts and you've made them real
mm-hmm.
in your work with students.
Yes.
Wow. Well, I wanted to bring up a actual anecdote from a friend of mine who went to the dentist who was mm-hmm. transitioning from female to male.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never thought about, until I talked to him, I never really thought about the everyday implications of transitioning to another gender, one of which is notifying your healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm.
And the courage that it takes And he talked about writing a letter to his dentist mm-hmm. and the dentist staff and telling them, mm-hmm. I'm changing my gender.
Right.
And the response that he got back was so welcoming.
Good. Wonderful.
And that's what I want. And so I just, when you were talking, I was thinking about even just a small, seemingly small, but a significant moment for that person
exactly.
to have to tell their healthcare staff and how they responded with such... One, the courage it takes for him to share that information, and then the support, the incredible support from those professionals. So I just thought of that example well, from a friend of mine who stayed with me.
And again, there's things that we have spoken about in school is the reception area is knowing what patients want to be called because someone perhaps who is transitioning and you go out and you say,
Mr. Smith,
where's Mr. Smith? Mr. Smith. And then, and so it's just very.
Oh, so what do you tell the students? How do they call?
What pronouns do you, as you get to, yeah. So, and I've also spoken with the, we keep little post-it notes. I mean, it's electronic.
Right.
But the people who are at that front desk mm-hmm. are also very aware. And they make great effort to when they are addressing, because it's a school,
right.
and sometimes you will, Mr. Smith. And they make great effort to address the person. How they want to be addressed. It's been a there's been great effort at the dental school, and
has it been successful?
Yes,
good.
I mean, every once in a while, there's something will happen mm-hmm. still, but yes.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's great. Really interesting to hear this. So, what else do you want to share about the impact that critical thinking's had in your work, Gay?
Well, in my work. I was trying to think of other things.
Or your personal life. You were going to share something, too, from your personal life?
Well, and again, I guess I will go back to work. And one of the things, I think that when I first got into, started learning, studying the critical thinking was the thing that I liked, and I stressed to the students, it's a skill. Because it's something that if you practice, and I always think of the basketball, shooting
right.
the basketball,
right.
that is something that is important. And on a personal level, again, with critical thinking, instead of me just emotionally making this decision, taking things apart, and probably the biggest thing where critical thinking came into my personal life, and I share this with the students, was with my mother. Mm. I lost my mom March 17th of 2015. And I was very lucky. I had a wonderful mom and dad. They set the marriage bar high, 64 and a half years.
Wow.
Mom passed. But I was down visiting her in the hospital, and we knew she was very sick. She and dad lived in assisted living. Dad still does.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the physician comes in, and it's a surgeon. He's done whatever and just was gone a very short period of time and said, your mother is just full of cancer. It's very hopeless. And it's just me and my dad standing there. My dad's always been bigger than life. My dad is at World War II. He's,
the greatest generation.
He is, and that's my dad. That's my dad.
Yeah.
And I looked at my dad, and dad was crushed. And so we're both not in too great of a place here. And this is, personal story, but we're talking, and okay, not anything against, I have good friends who are social workers, but anyway, this social worker from the hospital, I didn't know social workers were at the hospital, and I didn't ask for one, but anyway, the social worker came in, and again, they're living in assisted living, and the social worker says, well, I mean, we're not in a good place, but what are you going to do with your mom? I'm like, well, what are you going to do with your mom when she gets out of the hospital? I mean, it was about that.
Right. She was questioning
you.
Oh,
it was very cold.
Right.
And I said, well, I don't know. I don't know. I guess she'll go back to assisted living. Nope, she cannot do that. She will not be in good enough shape to go back to assisted living. So what do you want to do? She needs to go to a nursing home. I'm like, well, this is moving fast.
Right.
And my mother, and I actually think my mother was... quite a character, actually,
yeah.
But she'd always said that, Gay, if you put me in a nursing home, I will kill myself, and I think she meant that. So I'm hearing this lady say, about this nursing home, and I'm hearing mom's voice, and then she's just pulling out this list, and she's going, she can go here, nope, not there, here, which one do you want? And I'm like, can we get a private room? I didn't know, I was overwhelmed. So the lady left, and for whatever reason, which sounds a little funny, considering the circumstances, I thought, I'm a critical thinker.
Good for you. Your critical thinking just
was like suddenly, I thought, I'm a critical thinker. I thought, stop. And anyway, I thought, I don't have the information. She's making assumptions. I'm assuming, it was truly like all these things. And I stopped.
Right.
And guess what?
What?
It worked out. She ended up at a beautiful, everything worked out beautifully. But I will never forget that day. And for whatever reason, I stopped in my tracks. Because I was just thinking, I guess I've got to pick a place on this list for mom to go.
Right. Sort of like let the thinking be turned over to the social worker as opposed to your own. No, I need to think this through.
And I did. And it was...
Well, what did you do? Like, what was your...
Well, I thought, I don't have all the information. I don't even know who this lady is.
Right.
And, I don't even know her. I don't know who she is. So I thought, it's in Owensboro, so small town, but a smaller town. And I had friends, and I started calling my friends, in particular this one person. And she said, no, I know this guy, and he can have people come, and they'll take care of her, even if she's in assisted living. Anyway, it all worked.
In other words, this assumption that she has to go to a nursing home, you questioned that assumption and said, now, wait a minute, I need to get more information about what her options really are.
Correct. Because, again, from the social worker, it was just,
This is it.
End of story, period. And just which one do you want?
Wow.
And like I said, I did. I stopped or stepped back. And again, it was. I had this moment. I thought, I'm a critical thinker. Wait.
Oh,
stop.
I love that. I love that story. So what did you do with, did your mom go home?
It turned out she went to hospice.
Oh.
And, but it was a wonderful experience for her, and she was not in a nursing home. It was a little different. It wasn't exactly, but a hospice nurse, or I guess a nurse. Anyway, kind of going back to that story, I met with the chaplain, and she said, do you know hospice?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. And so we met, and I was talking to the hospice nurse, and the social worker called, said, I've got it worked out. I know which nursing home we're going to put your mom in. And I said, well, your timing's good. I'm meeting with this other person.
Right.
And
from hospice, right?
Yes. And the social worker said, well, I don't have time for that, so never mind. Or I don't have time to come talk to you. I've got this arranged. And the hospice nurse mouthed, I can help you. So it turned out to a beautiful place.
Interesting. So, you know, Gay, this example reminds me of how important critical thinking is, especially for us at those important moments when we're at a crossroads in our lives. And we have to make important decisions for ourselves or behalf of the people we love, and the importance of stopping, of saying, what's the questions I have? What information do I need? I need to make a decision for me.
Exactly. That's what critical thinking is. Again, I found it originally for my classroom with different exercises and in the clinic. But it's a reason why I believe critical thinking. I teach my students to utilize critical thinking in all walks of their lives. It's so important to be a good dentist, to be a good clinician. And to be, it makes you a better person.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that Brian and I talk about is, and the show is a lot about how, the premise of this show is critical thinking is for everyone.
This isn't
just something you need when you're a dentist. It isn't just something you need when you're in a classroom. This is a life skill.
This
is something that we all need and that we all practice throughout our lives, because our lives are constantly changing and our lives are complex. So I love these examples, because you are showing the importance and how integral critical thinking is to both personal and professional contexts.
Absolutely.
And you, I know you've presented your work on critical thinking.
Yes,
and
I have.
How have your colleagues in the School of Dentistry, how have they received these? Has your ideas been widely accepted by some of your colleagues?
Yes, it has. Again, we had some changes at school, so I had to give up. I had to make some choices and create those other two classes. But that freshman class, the wonderful lady, Dr. Kathleen Fisher, who's now taken the class, she wasn't there when I started this, and she has just taken this and just continued it on.
Wow. And it's that must be rewarding.
It's very rewarding. And also, too, in other classes, it's been embraced. I mean, they do kiddingly always say, well, okay, well, we need to stop and reflect because Gay's here, but because I do a lot of reflecting.
Uh-huh.
But they've been very kind, presented at, gosh, in fact, I did present in California.
Yeah, at the Critical Thinking Conference, and I bet people were very receptive to that.
Correct.
And you've taken this to dental conferences?
Yes.
And how has that been received?
Very well received. Again, going back to the evidence-based dentistry, the work with the librarians, that was actually presented also at their national meeting. The librarians, I was with the medical librarians, which was totally cool. And then different meetings I presented with the exercises that we have done in class with Brian,
Socratic questioning,
and also too about bias and the LGBT, presented about the book In Common, and actually something new, and again that I'm just on the cusp of, and again it goes back to walking in others' shoes,
right,
is with Dr. Edna Ross and Michael Blunk.
Michael Blunk, who we have interviewed on
the
show.
I know you have.
Yeah, from Hotel Louisville in Wayside Christian Mission, yes.
So what we have just started, it's just in its
beginning.
But I have taken my students, my clinical third and fourth year students, we went over to Hotel Louisville, had a wonderful meal, and then some of the clients we had talk back and forth. When I first did that, I had questions because really they were supposed to ask questions.
Right.
But I thought, oh, I've been in those situations when it's dead silence. So we're now asking, here's the clients and here's my dental students. And I had my questions. I said, well, who has questions? And they, in fact, the clients introduced themselves, completely took off their mask of who they, when I say take off their mask, who they were.
Wow.
But I asked the dental students who has a question, and it was dead silence. And I said, well, I'll start. And then one of the panelists, one of the clients said, no, there's a question. I never ask a question. I never had to use any of my questions. The discussion grew. And again, how do you treat people? What are the barriers to care? What are the healthcare disparities when you're homeless? How do you go to the dentist? How do you do things? What happens?
Right.
And that discussion was so rich. We're going to do it again. That was just kind of the beginning.
You took some students with you?
I took all of my third and I have I run a clinic, the Delta Divas, so I took all of them. So I had about 40.
So they were all in the room to hear
they
that?
They were all in the room.
And what did they say? I can imagine that was so eye-opening.
Well, they were asking them, a small thing that one had gotten kind of aggravated, one of the students, because they were trying to call, I think it was Wayside, and it's like, why don't these people have a phone? And why can I not get a hold of them? And why do I have to go through someone else? And that was explained. They talked about how they don't. In fact, if you're there at Hotel Louisville, you do not have a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it was, and how it feels. The clients would talk about how it feels, how people look at you, like, why are you like this?
Mm.
And they would talk about how their life, because being homeless, I believe, it's possible, could happen to anybody. Life happens. Things happen.
Right.
So it was understanding who, that they weren't just homeless people, that they were
people who are
human beings.
People first.
Yes. As a side note, one of my students has connected, and through a lot of people, there was a particular person who, due to living on the street, her mouth was really bad.
Mm.
And through the efforts, really, of not me, my particular student and other students, this person is receiving care. And when that person gets their smile, that will also, you're trying to get back in, and you have no teeth, it ain't good. It's hard to get a job.
Right.
So
this makes a big difference in their life in many ways.
In many ways.
Wow.
So that was the intellectual empathy, is, again, understanding where people are and why they are there.
Well, Gay, I'm just so thankful to you and everything you've done with critical thinking. You've taken this and you stayed with it. Like you said, the first year you went,
it was hard.
And you're not the only one I've heard but there was enough there. Other people have said, I got to go back. I got to try to understand.
Yeah.
And you've taken it. And the thing about it is this legacy that your students are taking this in, and they'll be models for their colleagues and their patients and their families, and it's so rewarding to hear about you, and I'm so thankful for you and everything you do.
Critical thinking, a little dramatic, but true, it changed my life, and I want to share that and help my students to develop those skills, to develop the intellectual traits, the virtues, to become those people
that they need to be. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for everything you do for U of L and for dental students and patients and people in the community and your colleagues.
Well, it's a joy. I love it. I get up every morning and go, I'm going to school.
I love it.
And by the way, I love private practice. Again, I came into this in such
This is your second career.
Yeah, but I came into it. This is just something to do because I was retired and I had nothing to
keep you busy.
Just to keep me busy. And who knew? I've discovered a wonderful world and the Delphi Center. I cannot say enough. You guys. Oh my gosh.
That's great. Awesome. I'm glad. Well, we are here for you, faculty at U of L, and it's just wonderful to be able to build something together. So thank you.
Critical thinking is for everyone.
Yay! Got that? You heard it here. Well, thank you for being our guest in the studio today, and I want you to keep on doing what you're doing. It's good stuff. All right. Well, remember that, folks. Critical thinking is for everyone.
Yes.
I'm coming at you, and I'm not kidding. 10 minutes of critical thinking with Dr. Barnes, your other co-host for this fine show, Critical Thinking for Everyone. Thanks to Patty and Gay for that wonderful interview. Great job asking questions, Patty. Gay, thanks for having so much to say. Thanks for sharing so much about yourself and about your approach. And you've been a really dear colleague of mine in critical thinking for some years now, as you indicated on the show. And I've been so glad to be part of some of your clinical training there at the dental school, and just really impressed with all the work that you do and all the people that you're mentoring in critical thinking in and out of the academy. So thanks for that, and keep up the good work. I just want to give a shout out to your excellent husband as well, who I remember spending good time with at the Critical Thinking Conference. I'll tell you what, folks, there aren't too many couples who go for their vacation date with one another during the year to the Critical Thinking Conference. But these two critical thinkers have been doing it now for some time, and I hope to see you guys out there again soon at one of our international conferences. But I'm not here to talk about that right now. I mean, I'm not here to talk about the international conference, even though it is coming up next summer and it's in Belgium and you really ought to go because it's awesome. But I'm here to talk about dentistry. Now, you might ask yourself, Barnes? What does Barnes know about dentistry? Isn't that sort of intellectually arrogant? Yep, definitely intellectually arrogant. I don't know much about dentistry at all, but I'll tell you what I do know. I know dentistry jokes. I got dentistry jokes. So, as we're rounding out the hour, how about a couple of dentistry jokes? I was thinking about something like, maybe you might have occasionally asked yourself, what's the most common dentist office appointment time? You know, I do this. I call my dentist, and, he has appointments, his office has appointments, and sometimes when I call, they're booked, Or sometimes when I want to go, I can't ever get in. So I might ask myself, what is the most common dentist office appointment time? The answer, of course, is 2:30. You know what I mean? 2:30? Ha-ha! Don't fall over with laughter. It's just, you know, thinking about it, right? You have to find a way to say that such that it indicates the 2:30 part, but still sounds sort of like the 2:30 appointment, right? And then you have, I don't know, I mean, at least the idea is that it's funny. Speaking of funny ideas, you might ask yourself, what do you call a dentist's advice? You know, sometimes certain things people tell you have names for that kind of advice, right? So we have, you know, we have maybe marriage counseling, we have life coaches, we have, you know, athletic trainers give certain kind of advice. What do you call a dentist's advice? According to my sources, I'm not sure how many dentists were involved in this survey, we call this their philosophy. Philosophy? Yeah, so of course these are jokes that rely upon some homonyms, right? So there's something in the word that we're using for the joke. That term sounds something like another word that kind of corresponds. So in this case, it's their philosophy, which some of us know something about. Now you might ask yourself, how does the dentist become a brain surgeon? Have you heard of that one, dentists and brain surgeons? It's easier than you think, according to my sources. The drill just slips. So don't let that happen to your dentist's office. You don't want your dentist to become a brain surgeon during your procedure. And I'm sure that never happens. Of course, it's a joke. Everybody just relax. We would want to ask ourselves if we're looking at these kinds of jokes, we say, well, what do I think is funny about these jokes? Well, it's the wordplay here. And it's also taking something that's relatively serious, I think, and relatively intimidating for a lot of people, maybe even fear-creating, right, which would be going to the dentist, and taking it and making some sort of funny, simple wordplay jokes out of that. You know, that's the value, maybe, of this. And so what does that have to do with critical thinking, right? Well, what it would have to do with critical thinking is, once again, when I'm telling jokes, there are a couple of different critical thinking features. First, I can ask myself about my own thinking. Well, what do I think about these? And if I think that they're not good jokes, what does that mean? Am I a dentist? Is it the case that some dentists might think, well, these are really trivializing and demeaning to my profession? Well, maybe. I don't know if that's my intention here, but I do think that there's a case to be made for that. The question is that the interpretation that seems to be the most valuable for the situation? And that's what the critical thinker would want to figure out. If there are multiple interpretations, like say somebody tells a joke to me and I'm a dentist, are they telling me a joke about, you know, my philosophy? Are they telling me that kind of a joke because they want to trivialize my profession? Because they want to make a joke out of my profession, right? I mean, that's some people think that. Maybe some of you remember Joe Pesci in Goodfellas, huh? Isn't that what went on? Oh, you think I'm a clown? I make you laugh, right? And then there's violence that ensues. That's kind of extreme. But of course, people will take offense at jokes, even when the joke is not directly offensive. When that happens, it's a really good opportunity to stop and look at myself. And to ask myself, do I think someone is going out of their way to offend me in this indirect way through a joke? Does it happen? Absolutely. Are some people deeply offended are some people deeply offensive when they tell their jokes? Absolutely. Do some people use jokes to come after other people? Absolutely. Is that happening all of the time? Absolutely not. If you're a person who is often offended at jokes, you might want to check the company you're keeping. And if you're offended by jokes that aren't even told in your presence, like you hear a joke on a radio, you might ask yourself, what is it about that I find so offensive? In some cases, it's that the joke offends a deeply held belief of mine, something that is personally important to me. it's a great time to stop and check my values. Is it important to me in a way that would perhaps result in anger if it was violated, or taking offense if it was violated? Is it so important to me that my career be taken seriously in every context that I hear about it? Or is it just maybe the case that I am not confident enough to feel like my career is meaningful without the verification and validation of others? Maybe that's why I'm offended by it. Maybe I really need that public validation. Maybe that's why I became a dentist in the first place, so that I could have some kind of public profile that is meaningful to me. The question is, do I even know that? Is that something I've made explicit for myself? That's what I want to do in critical thinking. Am I able to make the intellectual moves that I am making in real time explicit? Am I able to call myself out for good and bad intellectual moves? Of course, sometimes jokes are intentionally offensive, and sometimes when I'm offended, it's because that person said something intentionally, or that joke was sort of created and written in order to get some sort of a response from me that's negative, because that joke is one that's negative or malicious or hurtful or dangerous, right? So jokes that make fun of groups, for example, that aren't, I don't know, maybe even making fun of professions. I'm sure there are a lot of savage, hurtful lawyer jokes out there, for example. But I'm thinking about jokes that are racist or jokes that are misogynistic, that target someone for a characteristic that they didn't choose in any way, like their gender or their race or their biological sex, something like that. You know, we choose our professions, and you know, maybe there are things about our professions that are sometimes worthy of some fun being poked at it, you know. But, you know, I'm not trying to necessarily tell anybody how to think in this case or how to live with your values. I'm just trying to express what is one way that you might get a handle on looking at your own values to figure out if this is the case or not. I mean, you know, my opinion is, we ought to try to let stuff go when we can. You remember that turning the other cheek business? I know eventually you run out of cheeks, but I mean, in the comedy club, you run out of cheeks. Like, that's the place where the professional jokesters are, who are trying to make everybody laugh. Sometimes, you know, at anybody's expense, that's where you lose your composure. I don't know. Maybe we can do better than that. What did the dentist of the year get? A little plaque. You know that, right? I mean, this can't be offensive, right? I mean, unless you know, there's something about it that's really, really sensitive personally. I think that the dentist gets a little plaque. I mean, another wordplay, right? I mean, the plaque you put on the wall, the plaque that happens on your teeth. In fact, all of us get a little plaque every year, so maybe I'm a dentist according to this joke. I don't think that's true, but I'm definitely not a dentist. What did the dentist of the year get? And how about this one? This one's actually topical, because the reason I'm not on the show right now is because I'm in Panama. What was the dentist doing in Panama? Looking for the root canal. Oh my goodness. Panama jokes, they're everywhere. Last one, friends, last one. And I know that this one's for everyone, even you. What do you call a dentist who doesn't like tea? You call that person Dennis, friends. Dentists who don't like tea, they're called dentists, without the tea. All right, it's been great. I hope you've enjoyed Critical Thinking for Everyone. I will hold down the fort in Panama for you. You do the same in Louisville, Kentucky, or wherever you're rocking this thing. WFMP LP 106.5 FM, Louisville, Kentucky. Forward Radio, Social Justice Radio. It's for you. It's for everyone. It's a community treasure. Please support it. Because Forward Radio and Critical Thinking, they're for everyone!